In 1975, the Utah scholar and philanthropist Obert C. Tanner wanted Salt Lake City to build a great concert hall. The state had a great symphony and a great conductor, Maurice Abravanel, but no place of their own to play. They had ended up in the LDS Church's tabernacle for years, but that wasn't permanent. And Tanner knew if you wanted to get something done, Richard Iyer could be your man. This was before Iyer had run for governor or advised the Reagan administration. In 1975, Iyer was a young political consultant who had just managed Jake Garn's successful run for Senate. He was living in Washington, D.C. at the time. And that's where he was when Tanner called him.
Hearsay told me that Maurice Abravanel was as anxious to get out of the tabernacle as the church was to get him out. The church needed it for ecclesiastical purposes, and from what I heard, Maurice Abravanel was tired of people sitting in one part of the tabernacle only hearing the French horns. Maurice Abravanel was an interesting man. He'd been here a long time. He wanted to stay a lot longer. He and Obert Tanner, these two venerable sort of white-haired guys who love the arts. I mean, Obert Tanner runs this empire of emblematic jewelry, which is like a money cow, and he's a well-heeled guy who only gives to arts. I mean, Obert Tanner up on his ranch up on the Weber River would just blast classical music all the time, and they were trying to figure out, how do we get this hall? And I think it was Obert Tanner who was smart enough to say, let's make it part of the bicentennial. That's when people are focused. We don't want to just shoot off fireworks. We want to have a legacy here. We want to leave something for posterity. The Bicentennial Hall for the Arts. Now, they wanted to raise the money privately. They got some money from the legislature, but the legislature put a deadline on it. Unless you match this by December 31st of 1975, we're taking it back. And they tried and they tried, and it was too much money to raise. It was a recession going on. And finally they said, we got to do a bond election. And I knew Utah pretty well. These are not people who, a majority of which, are going to think, someday I'd like to go to the symphony. They're not going to think that way. How are you going to get them to vote to tax themselves? And he said, I don't know. That's why I'm bringing you out. And so we went to work. And you have to understand Obert Tanner. He doesn't go second class. He said the best acoustician, a word I'd never heard before, is a guy named Cyril Harris who lives in Manhattan, and I'm hiring him. And the first thing I remember, Cyril Harris, I remember as a blunt, really sort of I know my business kind of a guy. And he said, you need a shoebox. You need a rectangle. You need a classic hall like Carnegie Hall or like the Boston Symphony Hall. And if you do it any other way, you'll be making a mistake. And then, quick story, I'm on my way to the airport one day because Obert's sending me around the country and the world. I want the best hall. Go see some of these other halls. And I'm driving down 2nd South, and here's the Capitol Theater, a movie theater, boarded up, just a sort of a movie marquee, adult films. And I pull over because I've never walked in there before, and I bought a ticket. I forget what. I hope I didn't look at the screen. You could see that it was a big theater at some point, so I went and got the plans and did the research. It is quite a stunning theater. And the main thing that had to be done was pull all the stuff off of it and restore it to its condition. And I remember in my own mind, and this is a long time ago, but my memory of it, Doug, is having this little epiphany. If we can restore this hall and build a symphony hall for the same budget, I can sell this thing as a two-for-one sale. And I can draw in all the people, and there are a lot of them, who are historical. They don't want to lose old buildings. They want to restore things. And I thought, that is going to put us over the top. Because now we're uniting not to build a hall for a certain small subset of people. We're creating the arts in Utah. We're putting ourselves on the map. No great city exists without great arts, and we get two for one. The election was December 16th, and as a political consultant, this is how I thought. The winner will be the one who turns out the highest percentage of their vote. If there are 60% of the state that doesn't like this idea, we can still beat them with our 40% because we turn out 80% of our people and they turn out 20%. But I sort of moved off of that the more I started realizing this is not just for patrons of the art. This is for the community. This is for the city. So we started the call center in order to say we've got to identify the people who are for us and we've got to turn them out on December 16th. Picture in your mind a big room with long tables and a lot of phones. There's no cell phones there. We're just on these phones with cords calling people. And at first we had ballerinas and French horn players and thespians. I mean, it was a really interesting environment, right? But as the call center went on, we're getting people now who look more like they're going out to hunt pheasants. I mean, they're down-home guys. And I'm like, why are you here? We want this for our community. We want it for our children. We want it for our schools. That sort of became the groundswell. That it's not just a hall to go hear orchestras play. It motivates education and music and arts within our high schools and within our communities, and that's good for all of us. Election night. When the votes started to come in, we were in the lobby of the old Capitol Theater, picture that in your mind, watching a TV, an old TV, right? And it was going well. And we're like, can we hold this lead? Where are these returns coming from? And so on. And they finally got to the point where they called it as passed. And the image I have, I mean, this is a long time ago, but the indelible image is these two white-haired, passionate old men, Obert Tanner and Marisa Bravenel, hugging each other and crying like babies. I mean, it was touching. They were sobbing. We've got a hall. If you ask me to define a great city, I'd say it's one that's balanced. Its culture includes the arts. It includes sports. It includes business, right? I just sort of felt in that time, 1975, there was sort of a, I don't even know how to define it. People wanted to be on the map. They didn't want to be, you know, the only place between Denver and the West Coast. They wanted to have an entity and to be a city and so on. There was a pride that was trying to sort of burst out, and I think we tapped into that. And I think people thought about it and said, are the arts important to what we are, to the balance we have in this city? And I think they answered yes.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Richard Iyer is telling people this story because he's worried what will happen to a Bravenel Hall. For years, Salt Lake County leaders have been talking about renovating the building. Last year, they commissioned a master plan that itemized the problems. It estimated the cost of upgrades and retrofits at about $200 million. But the conversation took a very different turn when the Utah Jazz owner Ryan Smith bought an NHL hockey franchise in April and proposed redeveloping downtown in Salt Lake City. Smith's vision is a sports, entertainment, culture, and convention district. It would mean, among other things, creating a better flow between the east and west sides, which would mean renovating the two blocks between the Delta Center and City Creek. That's where a Bravenel Hall is right now. So county leaders are having to decide whether the concert hall fits into the vision of this new district or whether it makes more sense to just tear it down and move it. We're going to begin with David Porter. He's a violinist in the Utah Symphony. He's a spokesperson for the group Musicians of the Utah Symphony. And as you'll hear, they're opposed to demolishing a Bravenel, and they don't think it should cost hundreds of millions of dollars to renovate it. Porter told us about the first time he played in the hall. He was 22.
I was in my last year studying at Indiana University, and it was one of my very first auditions for a major orchestra. And I was sort of embarrassingly oblivious of what Salt Lake City was. I had this absurd notion of this salty lake and this bone-dry desert. And I flew in, and I was like, whoa, look at those mountains. And I come from Minnesota, so I was just wowed. I was absolutely stunned by that. And the city was astonishingly clean and quiet. It's very different than it is now. And I walked into the back of a Bravenel hall, not really seeing the hall from the front. And it's a blind audition, so they ensure that you come in such a way you wouldn't see the committee. And so I walked on stage, and the personnel manager was stomping away so that they can't tell if you're a man or a woman. And I came out there, and I turned around, and I was like, oh my gosh, it was so stunningly beautiful. The chandeliers and the gold balconies. And I was very nervous. I'd never taken an audition like this before, new repertoire. And I just remember starting to play my Mozart concerto and just being taken away by the transcendent beauty of the hall. It was
You sensed the sound right away.
Absolutely. From that moment, the sound was almost like, it was almost like a manifestation of the aesthetic beauty of the hall. It was a special moment that I will never forget. And when I talk to other people who auditioned and tell them about my experience, almost every one of them says that's so similar to mine. It was a special moment for those of us who won. Well, even that one I didn't win, and it was still a very special moment in my life. Yeah.
So you directly connect the sound of that space to the physicality of the space. You put them together.
Yes, and I think that's something that's really special about that hall. Huh. It's both acoustically and aesthetically stunning.
How do you understand? I know you're not an expert on acoustics.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a musician, so in that sense you are an expert on acoustics, but you're not like a technical expert on acoustics. But how do you explain or understand the dynamics of sound in that space? I guess it's in the way you sort of have described it to us, it's trying to sort of figure out the difference between round and warm and tinny and brittle, I think is how you those are the words you've used.
Right. Well, if you think of the, of a symphony hall, of a concert hall, as perhaps the most – well, definitely the most important instrument of the orchestra. Because no matter what – you know, like our concertmaster plays in this beautiful Cremonese Guadagnini, absolutely fabulous violin. You play that violin in Eccles Center, which is a great place to go see Hamilton. It's going to sound really small and dry, and it's not going to have the warmth and roundness. It's not going to do a service to that fabulous instrument. A Bravenel hall acts – as an acoustic amplifier. So it makes that violin sound just fill this beautiful big hall. And that takes an enormous skill to do. Bravenel Hall was built around its acoustics. They hired the acoustician first. And that is why we got lucky too. You know, it's not a science. It's an art to create a hall that sounds that good.
So you saying that we got lucky, I wanted to actually – that was a question I wanted to ask you, whether or not you figure in some way – because some are going to say, all right, we'll just rebuild a hall and we'll create round and warm and not brittle. So we can just – but you're – it seems like what you're saying in some ways is maybe it doesn't always work that way, that you capture lightning in a bottle in some way.
Absolutely. Yeah. So even today, even with the – incredible advances in science that we've had in engineering, it's still very hard to build a great concert hall. And there's been ones that have built recently where people have complained vociferously about their acoustics.
What do you think most people understand are the choices here?
Okay.
Okay, because I'm thinking, all right, tear that sucker down, build a new one, renovate that thing and spend – hundreds of millions of dollars. And then so we've got to figure it out. So how are you thinking about what the choices are that are in front of people right now? I know it's really complicated, but just in the sort of basic sense, what do you understand the choices to be?
Yeah. So I actually think you really aptly articulated what most people understand. They think it's, you know, this choice between a $220 million renovation or a new hall.
Yeah.
And I think there's been talking points promulgated that these are urgent needs of the hall. Like, if we don't do this, you know, it's no longer serviceable. But of course, we just played a concert in there for over 2,000 people, and they loved it. And it's beautiful. And you look at the hall, and it's just as beautiful as the day it was built. What does it need? It needs a new HVAC system.
Yeah. I guess the most recent master plan for the hall suggests that there are, as you say, some problems with it.
Yeah.
We can get into some of those, I suppose, in a minute.
Yeah.
But I wanted to sort of key on something that you said to us, that you really never heard much talk about replacing the hall because of these problems until Ryan Smith bought the hockey team.
Oh, yeah. Never heard it at all. Yeah.
So what are you getting at there?
Well, the reason that they wish to replace the hall is because it's in the way of something else. And what's difficult for us to know, not just the musicians, not just the symphony, but the public, is what exactly they want to build, because there's no public plan. I'm sure they have a plan, but for whatever reason, they don't wish to share it with the public. So what I can tell you is what I heard from Mayor Wilson. Mayor Wilson wants to bury the convention center where the hall is, and now she wants to build the hall on top. Before, they wanted to move the hall to Main Street where the Utah Theater was, but now they say they want to keep it where it is and build it on top of the convention center. And that's the only plan that she's given to the symphony. She said that to the symphony board, and that's as much detail as I think any of us have. And then she says she's going to come up with a plan B and C, but there hasn't been one given to us.
Mm.
Yes. And as far as why they want to do this, the only reason that we've been given is that they need to tear down the convention center for the west block just next to the Delta Center and part of the convention center on the block where Bravino Hall is, to create a central promenade. That seems very important to them. And Mayor Mendenhall says they want to have a permanent metals plaza. But again, there's been no real plan.
So what, as you understand it, Bravino Hall is in the way of this aesthetic vision and flow.
Right. So Mike Mann, who's a spokesperson for SCG, says that Bravino Hall is like his teeth before he got braces. That's facing the wrong way. And they want everything facing into the central promenade, kind of like Gateway.
So I want to I'm not sure how to put this, because it sounds like a kind of cloak and dagger way to put it, but it sounds like what you believe, and maybe what other musicians believe, is that the fix is in for demolishing our Bravino Hall. I mean, you've said that Mike Mann had been in touch with both mayors, Mayor Mendenhall and Mayor Wilson, about the possibilities of demolishing the hall for a long time, is how you put it. Do you want to say more about that?
Well, I should be careful saying that. I know that they have been in discussions about moving the hall to Main Street since early in 2024. And it seems impossible that they would be having those discussions if there wasn't already a plan in place. Like, why would they want to move a Bravino Hall and create this enormous expense and public outrage if there wasn't some reason to do so? And I think for all of us and the taxpayers, the idea that we don't have really any notion of why we're doing this beyond creating a central promenade, and we all want a more walkable city, but we all also know that there's a way to do that without tearing down one of the most iconic buildings in the state.
I want to come back to the way you think the hall could be reintegrated into some other kind of vision here in a second. But how worried do you think Mayor Wilson, or Mayor Mendenhall for that matter, are about a Bravino Hall being sort of in the way? Do they think that for Ryan Smith and the Smith Entertainment Group, it's kind of a deal breaker, and that if they don't get this right, he'll just ditch everything and head south like he had originally intended to in the first place? Like, as far as you understand, what are they really worried about?
I don't have any inside knowledge into that, so I can guess, and my guess is that they're very concerned. I think they're in a position – I like to describe it as going to a car dealership and deciding that you want to get the latest Corvette model, and you're not going to leave that car dealership until you get it. Mm-hmm. Well, once you go there, you know, they know that you're not leaving until you have that car. So why are they going to negotiate? And I think we're in a little bit of that situation with these sports teams. SEG knows that Salt Lake City is not willing to lose those two teams. And so they have a very strong hand to negotiate, and they're using it. Mike Mons has stated numerous times that he wants the most transparent process possible, and they're not doing this to make money primarily. They're doing this for the benefit of Salt Lake City. And when they look at the response of the Salt Lake City public, there's really just one issue where they're just completely outraged about the chance of losing Abravanel Hall. And if SEG could just say, you know what, we hear you. 2.5% of the 100 acres we're getting, you know, we can preserve that. We can work around it. We can create a manner of integrating it into this new district.
So how do you then integrate that hall into what might be what we think is Ryan Smith's or, you know, SEG's larger aesthetic vision? They want it to be sort of walkable. They want this promenade. They want maybe the symphony to face in a different direction. Like, can you make you think you can make it work?
Yeah. Well, first of all, obviously, I'm not an architect or a city planner.
Yeah.
And we have no plan. But, for instance, Bree Shear, who's the head of the Planning Commission and an architect herself, has a blog called therightplace.pro. And in it, she has illustration of how Abravanel Hall could be integrated. And it's really not that complicated.
You put the entrance in the west.
Yeah, you put another entrance in the west. You create a lobby. She said maybe a wine bar, you know, now that the liquor laws has been changed. Yay, you know. And then people could walk in from the other side. You could create an ADA entrance there. There's lots of creative ways of doing this. But again, without a plan, it's awfully hard to do it.
$220 million, that number gets thrown out there. And, you know, a lot of people are like, well, just do another one. Why is it cost 200? What do you make of that number and these, or at least those, that the scale of those kinds of numbers?
Yeah. Well, 40% of that's new build. I mean, that's not actually renovating the hall itself. That's people wanting more stuff, like a rehearsal hall, more office space. You know, that's quite a bit different than saying the hall needs $220 million. We estimate, and from that master plan, that about $35 million are deferred maintenance, you know, and they have known about the HVAC system for a long time. So that, yeah, that definitely needs to be fixed. And sure, sprinkler systems in the hall is a great idea, you know. We're all for thoughtful renovations.
Is there consensus among musicians about what to do?
There is, absolutely. I mean, do all of us agree? No. But it's like I've talked to one, and I've heard there's another who want a new hall. And so that's out of 85. I'm part of an elected committee, and there's seven of us, and we're all passionately in favor of saving Abravanel Hall.
Where are you in terms of agreement with the board?
Well, that's a good question. I know of board members who are very passionate about saving the hall. I've been told that there are board members who want a new hall. I think the board and our management are being very cautious. As it seems city council is and the county council about not offending SEG. And so there just seems to be a sense that people are walking on eggshells and very concerned that if they come out too hard for the hall, they're going to get nothing in the end.
One of the things that Richard Iyer told us about the original idea for a symphony hall was that the original idea was that they wanted to make this multi-purpose cultural facility. But then they realized, you know, the problem when you do that is that you wouldn't make it ideal for either of the things that you want to do, that it would be compromised. And so they went with a different idea. They just focused on it being one thing. And it seems as though the idea of building a new concert hall is resurrecting the concept of a multi-purpose cultural facility. Do you think that's right?
I think that's a big concern. They say that they are not going to do that, but I'm still concerned that we'll, you know, replace granddad's Rolex with your son's Apple Watch, and just end up with something much less valuable. That is a big concern. They state that the movies are a priority. And a concert hall that's designed for acoustic music is just never going to be as good for amplified music. That's part of the, you know, trade-off. So,
what do you think is going to happen? And when do you think – I mean, the thing you keep saying, this is the sort of the recurring theme in this conversation, is we don't have a plan. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
When do you think you will, and what do you figure is going to happen?
I have no idea when we're going to see a plan.
Yeah.
They don't seem to wish to illustrate the plans until they've been fully agreed to. So when we see a plan, my guess is that will be what the Salt Lake County will vote upon. I don't know what will happen. I believe that it makes so much more sense to keep the hall. It's so much more rational, logical, cost-effective, that ultimately people will come around to saying, yes, this makes sense. We can't tear this down. The public outrage will be too extreme. And there's this other thing. You know, they talk about wanting to be a tier one city. You know, let's think about some tier one cities. Let's think about New York City. Why do people go to New York? Is it to see the Yankees? Sure. But is it also to go Broadway to see the Metropolitan Opera, which, by the way, that was designed by the same acoustician who designed the Bravenel Hall, right? People come to that city because of its great culture, not just because of sports, you know? And we have that. What's more exceptional about Salt Lake City than having a basketball team and now a hockey team is that it has one of the country's great orchestras and a great ballet with a live orchestra. That's so rare. Why would we give up the very thing that makes us exceptional for something that, honestly, a lot of other cities do have?
David Porter, thanks very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
David Porter, he's a violinist in the Utah Symphony, a spokesperson for the group Musicians of the Utah Symphony. We'll take a break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for Radio West comes from our members. Find out how at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we've been asking, what's going to happen to Abravanel Hall? The fate of the beloved concert hall has been thrown into question in the negotiations of this new sports, entertainment, culture, and convention district in the city. Now, while the process will, of course, be heavily influenced by the Smith Entertainment Group, the fate of Abravanel Hall is in the hands of Salt Lake County leaders. For weeks, we tried to get County Mayor Jenny Wilson to agree to an interview. We gave her plenty of options, but she turned us down, or as a spokesperson put it, she was not available to participate. We were able to talk to Matt Castillo. He's the county's director of arts and culture, and he told us what a lot of people told us. Abravanel Hall is amazing, but as for its fate, it's complicated.
Abravanel Hall is an absolutely beautiful building. It's an icon in the downtown cityscape. It's an icon for its acoustics, for the beauty of the auditorium itself and the lobby. But we've known for a long time that there's a lot of actually significant challenges with the design of the hall as a whole. The lobby and the back of house spaces are significantly undersized compared to the seat count and the number of musicians and artists and staff and crew that the hall supports. The hall has a lot of significant accessibility concerns. It was built before ADA was a law and before a lot of those regulations were in place. And so it can be, frankly, an incredibly unwelcoming place for anyone in a wheelchair that uses a mobility device. We've known for quite some time that there are some challenges, and we've been able to address some of those with smaller scale renovations. There was a larger renovation in the late 90s to add space for a ticket office, and then we've done some additional work, add an escalator, do some remodel to the lobby. But those really didn't address a lot of kind of some of the deeper challenges around helping the hall really, I think, fulfill the vision and the need that it has. And so we actually started in early 2023 for an updated master plan process. We were, of course, working really closely with the Utah Symphony. to say, let's really study these issues and figure out, you know, how can we best preserve everything that is loved and cherished about the hall, but also can address some other real practical challenges about the hall. So throughout 2023.
And this is before Ryan Smith decides he wants to buy a hockey team.
Yeah, this is long before any of these discussions around this sports, entertainment, culture, and convention district had come about. So we spent a year engaged in extensive community engagement. We, of course, worked a lot with the musicians, staff, and other artists of the symphony. We worked with county staff that regularly work within the building. We hired a architecture firm, Sperano & Mooney, as well as a national acoustic firm, Kierkegaard Consulting and Theater Consultants, a theater consulting firm, to help us look at the hall. We finished that project just as the Sports and Entertainment District came together. So I think that's maybe one misconception, is that this master plan was created as a result of the Sports and Entertainment plan. But it was an extensive process. And we found, you know, verified all the things that everyone loves about the hall. Again, the acoustics are world-renowned. The beauty of the hall, the memories, the community associated with the hall. But again, you know, some of the things I already mentioned, circulation issues, issues in the back of house, inadequate support space, lots of safety issues, just because the space was built really smaller than what's needed to support it.
So, but what was the conclusion you came to? What was the conclusion the mayor came to that, boy, this needs a lot of renovation.
Yeah.
It's going to cost a lot of money. Did the county decide we can afford to do that? We should do that? Like, what was the conclusion then?
Great question. So there were a number of recommendations that came out of that and a few concepts of how those recommendations could be fulfilled to address, you know, accessibility, to address the age of the mechanical equipment and so forth. And those concepts were priced, and those are the $200 million and $216 million costs. One of the things that I can maybe help clarify is that those costs are extremely high. We wouldn't necessarily have to incur all of those costs in order to address some of these issues. But a lot of the kind of core issues that I think really do need to be addressed in some way are significant.
Accessibility. So the conclusion was we are going to have to spend a lot of money to get this building right.
Yeah, exactly. Though there wasn't immediately a source of funding available for this list. That was kind of the next phase of this
project. So just an acknowledgement that we really do need to fix it. It's really going to – and it's really going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a real estate industry website, newspaper called Building Salt Lake City. Former Salt Lake City Councilman Luke Garrett's been reporting this story, as you probably know. And he says he learned from public record requests that early this year, Abravanel Hall was really close to demolition and reconstruction. Is that right?
We looked at a lot of different options. When we published the master plan and the discussions around the district started to happen, you know, we said, here's a set of recommendations, a pretty costly list of issues we know we need to fix. And then here's this new significant thing happening right next door. Let's figure out how we can reconcile these two things and make sure that everyone is kind of contributing to a joint vision that's going to serve everyone's needs and goals.
But I think what they're saying is the way you decided to reconcile that was to tear down Abravanel Hall and move it to the theater district and rebuild a new one, because it's just going to cost too much money to renovate that hall. It just efficiency-wise, it just makes more sense to rebuild a new one. Is that right?
No, there was never a decision to move the hall. It was something that was looked at a very surface level, and we quickly realized that it wasn't feasible or a desirable outcome. So it was part of our due diligence of, you know, looking at every possible way to approach this. But there was never any decision to do that. It was truly an exercise to say, you know, is this something worth exploring? And it was quickly determined that it was not.
So it's overstating it to say it was close to demolition. It wasn't. It was one of the things. You did consider that site. You did consider that.
Yeah, the site was considered. Yeah. But no, I don't think there were ever any decisions made. And it was all part of the, really, I would say, maybe a due diligence process, which I think is incumbent upon us. You know, this is a public space. There's And, you know, there are many opportunities when it comes to Abravanel Hall and moving forward. And decisions still have not been made, and we're still continuing to look at lots of different options around this. And I would say that that was a part of that very early process.
There seems to be some confusion about what Mayor Wilson's intentions were and still are for Abravanel Hall. Back in May, she spoke to the Utah Symphony, Utah Opera Board, and she said – this is what she said. She said – the most affordable option is to move the exhibit space, which is the Salt Palace, under the Abravanel block and build – this is her quote mm-hmm. – and build a revitalized new symphony hall above. We know that's not the community preference, but it is the affordable preference. Speak to that if you would, because what she seems to be saying to the board then is – We know it's not the community preference to do this, but mm-hmm. it seems like the thing that makes the most sense financially is for us to tear down Abravanel Hall and rebuild something smaller, something more modern. What do you say to that?
I think, you know, the county, you know, and in my position and the way we've been approaching this, you know, again, since the master plan was created all the way through where we are now with all the discussions around the district, you know, we really want to find and are focused on preserving everything about the hall that we love, right? The acoustics, the hall itself, while addressing a lot of these challenges. We are still very much committed to doing that, but we
also – keeping the hall there.
Yeah, we're committed to prioritizing that, you know, okay. while also saying that, you know, no final decision has been made and okay. we're still looking at every opportunity.
Keeping your options open.
Yeah. Okay. I think, you know, I will say from my perspective as, you know, someone that's been heavily invested in this space as a child, but also in my role as, you know, being honored to be one of the stewards here, I think there's an incredible amount of opportunity here to honor the legacy of Maurice Abravanel, of the symphony, and of this hall, while also making very smart decisions that are very responsive to community needs that were found in the master plan.
But you know what critics of tearing down that place are hearing when you say that? What you're saying is, look, guys, it's great, but it's a mess. And we can still preserve the name of Maurice Abravanel. We can make a world-class concert hall, but not with this building. That's what they're hearing when you say that. One of the things that Mayor Wilson said is she at that May meeting with the board, she said that there were members of the board and others who loved Abravanel Hall, but that saw – and here, let me quote her again. She said, but that also saw an advantage to some new future smaller facility that has an ability to really lean into a hall of the future. Now, that does seem to indicate that she believes in part, and maybe you do too. It sounds like kind of what you do, that the best, if not the most popular way forward is something different, is something smaller that can still preserve the idea of Maurice Abravanel mm-hmm. or a, mm-hmm. but not be that building.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I certainly wouldn't say, and I don't think the county is saying that there's, you know, an identified best way to move forward. I think it would be unfortunate.
Well, what is she talking about then when she says a new future smaller facility that has an ability to lean into a hall of the future? What does she mm-hmm. mean by that? As you say, there's no blueprint for that, but yeah. clearly she has something in her mind that's more efficient, that's more modern, that's more new.
Well, there is a blueprint for that, and that's the master plan that was created. That's very much the blueprint that we're using here, and that's what she's referring
to. So it's not a new building necessarily. It could be that existing building, but just really reworked.
Yeah, exactly.
Is Mayor Wilson convinced Abravanel Hall should stay where it is?
I think Mayor Wilson is looking at every opportunity that we have right now. Again, no decision has been made. You know, there's a lot of different factors that are being weighed.
She's not leaning somewhere? Because she said in May, I know that's not the community preference.
Mm-hmm.
So she does know that all these heartwarming mm-hmm. Notes of love for Abravanel Hall are out there. But she said – but it is the affordable preference. So she's clearly going to have to make a decision between this affection for this mm-hmm. hall mm-hmm. and what might she think is best for
right.
the county.
Right. Well, No, I think it's hard to say if we're leaning one way or another at this point, because you know we're still very early in the process and there's still so many unknown factors at this point.
Matt, thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Matt Castillo, he's the director of the Salt Lake County Arts and Culture Division. We'll take another break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. We're talking about the fate of Abravanel Hall today. And as you've heard in all of our conversations so far, we've asked people what they thought Ryan Smith and the Smith Entertainment Group was thinking about saving Abravanel or moving it. So we just asked them ourselves. Mike Mon of SEG joined us this week. And one of the things he was not willing to do was be specific about whether they prefer Abravanel Hall to be renovated or moved. And as you'll hear, he told us the hall is where it is, and they aren't going to be the ones making the call anyway. The county is. SEG has always referred to this redevelopment project as a sports, entertainment, culture, and convention district. But Mon pointed out in our own coverage, we've always left out the culture and convention part.
I know in your previous story on this, there was a bit of a verbal eye roll when I emphasized that it was a sports, entertainment, culture, and convention district. But I think that it's very important to make that distinction. We have never once publicly called it just a sports and entertainment district. From our very first communication, we've referred to this in all of our public statements from the first Salt Lake City Council meeting on as sports, entertainment, culture, and convention. It's essential to us that it include all four of those elements. A sports and entertainment district by itself is easy to build. We own 111 acres down in Sandy. We could easily put one there. The difference is that culture and convention are essential to what this district has and to what makes it unique and what makes it a vibrant future part of this vision of what a downtown core can be for generations to come.
So let me make sure I have this right. So the original idea was to keep the Jazz downtown, build a more sort of build something in the southern part of the valley. That's where the hockey arena would go. But you say the plan changed when you saw what you've described as this bigger vision, and that is the reimagining of Salt Lake City. Is that right? And that takes into account all of those things, all of the four things that you mentioned. Am I getting that part right?
So as we continued to meet with the mayors of Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County, with the Speaker of the House, with the Senate President, with the Governor, and with many other interested individuals, the community organizations, et cetera, it became very clear that there was a very strong desire to make sure not only that the Jazz stayed downtown, which was, of course, our plan always, but to bring hockey downtown as well and to leverage that as a catalyzing moment to help tie together downtown in a way that would make sure that, in the words of Natalie Gochner, that this generation would carry the baton of city building. And so as we worked with so many different wonderful individuals in this community, it became clear that while this would be harder to develop down here and would cost more and be a much more complicated process, it was the right thing to do to make sure that we could ensure the vibrant and activated future of a downtown urban core and of our central city for generations to come.
Help me understand how you're thinking about the kind of aesthetic or like ergonomic layout of this reimagined part of the city. One of the things you've said is there are too many walls in the way downtown was built. Explain what you mean by that.
Yeah, so as you look at downtown Salt Lake City right now, you've got the Gateway on one side of the Delta Center, which is inward-facing retail.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Salt Palace on another side that is cut off sort of that ability to go back and forth on First South. And so it's created some walls that inhibit the flow and the connection between the east and west sides of downtown Salt Lake. And so in working with the city and with the county and with the state and, again, many other groups within the community about these conversations, how do we activate a downtown core in a meaningful way. And a lot of that is, how do we reconnect the east and west sides of downtown once again?
Of course, this is the obvious question. Is Abravanel Hall one of those walls? I mean, it is perpendicular to the street. It creates a kind of blockage. So is it a wall?
Abravanel Hall is an important and beautiful piece to our city's history. We've been emphatic and clear and consistent in our statements that it is essential to this district, that it include Abravanel Hall, that it include UMOPA, that it include the convention center. We've also acknowledged that the county owns and operates all of those facilities, and it's up to the county to make any decision on any of those properties, but that it is very important, in fact, essential to what we're doing, that everything needs to be included there, and this needs to work for the symphony, needs to work for the museum, needs to work for the convention center. Or it won't meet the purpose of what this district is meant to be.
Wait, are you saying that Abravanel Hall, where it stands, you're cool with that?
Oh, I've said from the very beginning that the county owns and operates those all three of those facilities, and whatever they decide to do, we're fine with that.
Does the mayor, I'll put it that way because it's the county's call, does Mayor Wilson have anything to worry about? I mean, one of the things that we have heard from supporters of keeping Abravanel Hall where it is that Mayor Wilson and the county and others are worried that, gosh, you guys could potentially pull the plug on your project if you don't get your way on Abravanel Hall. You're here to say that's absolutely not the case. This is not a deal breaker in any way for us.
There is no, quote, my way on Abravanel Hall. I've never asked for any way on Abravanel other than that we are committed to making sure that it remains on site, that the symphony is an essential part of this district. But your question seems to indicate that I feel one way or another, which is not fair or accurate. We have never said what we want to do there. We have said consistently and emphatically that it is the county's decision for Abravanel, UMOPA, and the convention center, and that we look forward to partnering with them, but it is their decision, and to insinuate that there is a, quote, my way is inaccurate.
Okay, great. I guess where the misunderstanding is coming on my part is that you've talked about there being too many walls in the way the downtown was built, and you've said that Abravanel Hall is perpendicular to the street and therefore, I'm quoting you now, and therefore creates some of that blockage. So it sounds like what you've said is it's not ideal. And so that's maybe where I'm getting the idea that you may have suggested, gosh, as the county is considering all of this, maybe your call, but you could think of another way. I've misread you, it sounds like what you're saying.
I think the best way that we've tried to talk about it is that much of downtown Salt Lake City has been developed a bit piecemeal, and it feels that way. I've
right.
most often compared it to my teeth when I was 10 years old yeah. and in serious braces, that we've got a bunch of things that may not fully align. The Delta Center, for example, opens up onto a parking lot.
Yeah.
One of the things that we want to make sure we do differently here is that we will change the main entry to the Delta Center to face east so that it faces into the district, so that it helps, again, connect the east and west sides of downtown in a way that creates a bit of a front door to the Delta Center and to all the activities that go on there. We want the front door of the Delta Center to face into the community that way. And so what we've mostly talked about is the desire to put some braces on downtown and help it feel like a cohesive development as we move forward to making sure that we create this enlivened and energetic and activated downtown core.
Yeah. So do you think Abravanel Hall could be remodeled to face in a better direction, put it that way, to fold into that plan that you just mentioned?
I'm not able to comment on any remodeling to Abravanel. That's a county decision. The county has the data. I've seen no information on what that would take, and it's not my place to comment on.
It's not your place to say what you would like to see happen, possibly, as a major player in all of this?
I've said from the very beginning, the county owns and operates those three different facilities, and the county will make those decisions, and we are happy with whatever the county decides. Our place is to focus on what we're doing in the sports and entertainment side. You've seen that we've released all of our drawings and whatnot in terms of that at the Salt Lake City Council hearings, and demonstrated what we're looking at on those two blocks and how those would be activated in a way that would hopefully bring a lot of vibrancy, a family-friendly environment, a place where different organizations and community groups could hold festivals and come downtown. And our hope is that we can do that in a very meaningful way that will put the city in a position to thrive for generations to come.
Mike Maughan, thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug.
Mike Maughan, he's an executive with the Smith Entertainment Group. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Stevie Shaughnessy is our intern. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Carrie Watson is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.